It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you, this is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me, as always, is my co-host, Steven Brown. And very excited to be here. Very excited to start talking. Dave Gonzalez is back.
Holla at your boy.
He's super excited to be here to say things.
It took us like
to be recorded.
It took us like four times to record it because because Dave kept coming
in. He wanted to be heard.
He kept coming in like during the intro.
You guys are being too shy. It was about six or seven.
Well, to be fair, I could have just edited that out, but it was much more fun to just berate you and make you self-conscious before you talk for an hour.
I don't need to take all this.
Get y'all set up. Get your liquored up. Get you set up.
Oh, we are liquored up.
It's a late night one. We were going to do another topic. We were going to have different guests. It was one of those weeks where everything got kind of changed.
And things happen.
It's 8:30. I think this might be the latest we've ever done one.
Yeah, I'm tired.
This is the latest I've been here. So
yeah. I think a couple of the movies we've done them on Friday night. Like we've left a theater and come back here, but it's very rare that we do them this late.
This last minute too, because tomorrow's Monday.
Is tomorrow the last day ever?
Well, no, like we have to always have the show out on Monday.
That was so ominous. Yeah, but I think we'll just say up front, this is not going to be tomorrow's episode. Yeah,
this guy's like a
I don't know when
calendar.
This is going to come out.
It's crazy.
Ready to go.
It was just like, it was like a deadline. You're like, this is the last minute.
This is the end. You're like a Mayan calendar over here.
The world is on fire.
Enjoy it.
And everyone's at James Franco's house in a movie that's way overrated.
It's a funny movie, but it is overrated.
It's not that
funny. It wasn't as good as everyone made it seem like it was.
It makes me wonder what like future Steven would do. Because you always talk about future Steven in these podcasts. Mm-hmm. And how
I don't ever try to anticipate his actions.
Okay.
Good. You two are not on speaking terms.
No, we're not. We don't get along. He's just mad because I, leave all these problems for him to solve.
That's awesome.
I feel like if you ever found a TARDIS, it would end with you getting punched in the face.
Right, I'd go to open it and just like my fist would come out of it and hit me in the nose. You always wanted a broken nose too, you jerk.
Take that, Pat Steven. You want a broken nose?
Well, a little bit. I just like a little crooked nose.
Well, like
I think
De Niro?
Yeah, like De Niro, or like Marlon Brando.
I don't know. You go too far in your Adrian Brody territory.
Yeah, right.
Nobody wants to be... Adrian Brody looks like Data after a drunken fight.
Damn.
Nobody wants that.
Good.
No.
Poor Adrian Brody's like, only if I knew.
Yeah. I guess it depends on how
he's
you know.
He's got the money.
He does.
It's true.
That doesn't make up for the nose,
though. He can get that thing fixed, though.
He has the money
that
you can lift his nose up and... Put a new nose in there.
Take care of all that nose.
We just spent about 60 seconds on Adrian Brody's
nose. We've never mentioned it before on the show.
No, it's new territory.
That goes to show that we'll cover every topic given enough time. Given enough time, we'll get to just about everything. This is the podcast that goes everywhere.
It's like that old theory, if you have a room full of monkeys on typewriters, eventually they'll write all of Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Right. That's what this podcast is.
That's exactly it. We're a bunch of monkeys in a room screeching at each other with the record button.
Eventually we'll cover everything.
Given enough time.
Well, today we're going to cover a topic we've never actually gotten to, which surprises me.
Yeah.
We've mentioned a few of these titles, but today we're going to focus on non-superhero titles.
Oh, my God, yeah.
So everything from indie comics to stuff that Marvel and DC does, to things like Vertigo, or even gray areas like Matt Fraction's Hawkeye isn't really a superhero.
Yeah, I guess we can start with Hawkeye's a really good example of Marvel taking a character who is primarily, an Avenger and all that stuff, and then just bringing him kind of like making it as realistic as possible and being like, hey, what would a guy who's just got, he's like the best archer in the world do on his days off when he's not running around the Avengers? And it's something it's kind of interesting just to see that it's just like these guys are doing other things besides like, I'm saving the world today and fighting the Kree and I'm out in space and in the past time traveling. And it's basically just Hawkeye is like is in an apartment and there's a bunch of gangsters that live like across the street or something that are trying to like run him out of the building. And he's just trying to like take care of his neighborhood.
It's kind of Hawkeye is kind of like if you took the 7 pages of Peter Parker in Spider-Man and made that the entire comic.
Yeah.
It's like
I mean, they had an entire issue where they just focused on his dog.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it just followed the dog around. Yeah. Which was awesome.
But I mean, it's great.
I think that's Marvel trying to attempt to do what a lot of these other titles have.
Which is interesting. Done. Every other Hawkeye miniseries they've done or anything is always him in the circus, him in this and this or whatever. And this is the first one that actually feels like it's being published by an indie company.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't even think they're even doing other superheroes in it. I think they had like Mockingbird and like Spider-Woman, but it was very like low key, them just hanging out playing cards or something.
Out of costume?
Yeah, out of costume kind of stuff. And it's like you said, it's Marvel just trying to push, you know, letting Matt Fraction and David Aja just kind of, you know, take it down to the end of the runway and see what it'll do.
Yeah, I read the first trade from you and I really enjoyed it, but I haven't.
Yeah, and I did hear, I think maybe, John, you mentioned this, that their run's ending in like issue 25 or something or sooner, or like 30.
I would be very surprised if they keep that title going.
I don't see it.
It can't.
No, it could. It just wouldn't do as well.
I hate it when they try. It was like when Joss Whedon did Astonishing X-Men.
They kept trying to.
They put Warren Ellis on it, and Warren Ellis is great. But it's like, no, this was Joss Whedon and John Cassaday's book.
Yeah.
And you gave them a number one. It's not like they came on to Uncanny.
Yeah. Right. They didn't take over new X-Men.
Yeah.
Or
just
they started a new
ended
book.
And move it out.
It's the only book that I've read since Infinity Gauntlet. That came out that was Marvel based. Like it was that good. Like it turned me over and like went through.
Yeah.
It's by far the best book I had. Iron Man even being in like a little cameo over there of coming in and trying to fix up his home entertainment center.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I heard about through. That. Yeah.
Yeah, it's stuff like that that's like really sweet. It's something that's just nice to see these characters interact and not talk about like Galactus or something. And it's just like, oh yeah. Cause I like the computer at the store will stop working or the TV will stop working. And I call like my version of Iron Man. I call Carm who knows how to do technological stuff. And I'm like, hey, it's not working. And then he'll be like, well, try this. And then it works. And I feel like Hawkeye, you know, but, yeah.
So you feel like Hawkeye when you can't do something on your own.
That book in particular, Hawkeye's kind of like, he's kind of a fuck up. And I relate to that. So I think in some instances, I do appreciate that.
He is dope. They,
it speaks to me.
The book is dope altogether. I mean, it just ties into what's really popping. Because the whole point of it is that Batman's Batman, Superman's Superman, you know, like Captain America's Captain America. But when you go to it, there's a whole part of it where there's superheroes or not superheroes, but like these main characters that aren't superheroes saving the day. And Hawkeye taps into that like no other.
Yeah.
You know, and it really works on that. I remember when I was introduced to it, John, I know you have some stories too about it. Steven, you always tell me what books are out there in the indie world that aren't Men in Tights.
Right.
Yeah, and I guess that's a good example. I'm really, really into like the Marvel stuff, so finding indie titles that can hold my attention is rare. But when I do, it's just like I'm all in. Like Why the Last Man, I got all sucked in. Saga's probably my favorite indie book right now. It's awesome.
Yeah, Saga's great.
Yeah, it's just like there's just
preach.
There's so many awesome books out there, and it's just interesting to that it's almost like there's like a whole new market for them. It seems like it's kind of like more people are getting into comics because like the movies and stuff, and then trying to find stuff that's more like highbrow than like whatever Bendis is writing, you know, at the time.
Yeah, and I think the key phrase that you just said is keep your attention, because it's you always want to read new stuff. And I think about some of the indie books I've loved, but then I thought about how many of them I fell off and came back to later. I was a huge, huge fan of Bone, but I didn't read the end of it until way later, it was like a one-volume set. I love Hellboy. It's probably one of my favorite books, which I think counts as an indie title. It's more of a monster title, but I wait for the library editions. Walking Dead I read as a monthly for a while. Now I wait for the hardcovers. And maybe that's a good thing. Saga I read and trade.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a good thing because they read as novels.
Yeah.
That it's easier, and it's not this interconnected universe where it's like, oh, I missed the last Spider-Man and now I don't understand what's going on in Iron Man because they crossed over.
Right. Exactly.
They're so separate that you can come to them when you're ready to.
Yeah, and I guess too it's something where there's so much more freedom with the indie books, which is what I really like. Like Saga is a great example, and Why the Last Man Before, both written by Brian K. Vaughan, were great because he'll do anything. You know, like you kind of know if you're reading Batman Monthly or Captain America Monthly, well, they're not going to kill Cap, and if they do, you know they're going to bring him back. and then with like the indie books, you really just, you don't know what's going to happen. Like, assume the title character is safe, but even that's not always
even
true.
That's not safe. No,
you know, like Walking Dead's a great example where, I mean, they're killing characters left and right in that book every month.
They could kill Rick and that book would not
and then
stop.
It, yeah, it would follow the kid, or then the kid would die, or they'd follow another character in the group. Like, they can't go anywhere.
That's why the
it.
Cast is always so nervous.
They should be, and that's actually probably good for the producers, because if a cast member starts asking for more money, it kills character off, because they don't even have the redneck dude in the comics, so it's like, what the fuck does the show care?
Call it a
you
day.
Know? At this point, the show has its own, this is a side note, I guess, but the show has its own fan base, and the comic has its own fan base, to where there's a lot of people who are reading the comic that aren't watching the show, and there's a lot of people watching the show that don't even know it's a comic, so it's like, they don't have to worry about, like you said, the redneck.
They don't have to
worry
about ticking the fans off, and also... I think they've gotten a push from what Marvel and DC has done. When we know there's a Batman movie coming out, we know it's going to be its own continuity.
Yeah.
Like, we know Ben Affleck is not going to follow what Christian Bale did.
Yeah.
Because we've had decades of different versions
of that
character. And we
also know he's not Dick Grayson either, right?
I guess
like
the
he's
going to
be Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
The example that wouldn't have been like Batman Returns, Batman Forever, and Batman and Robin. They were all the same continuity. Where they changed major characters like that,
right?
You know, mm-hmm. But yeah, I even find stuff like, you know, Kick-Ass was. I had to stop reading at some point because Mark Millar is a potty mouth. Like, I know, I swear, but this man is just like filthy. But he is writing this new book,
Kick-Ass. I like Millar. I like depending on what he's doing. I loved his Wolverine Enemy of the State.
Yeah.
I liked Wanted. I thought I liked it much more than the movie.
Wanted in the comic, yeah, I guess for
it's a totally different story.
It is way different. And that was pretty vile, but it was something where it was so entertaining. And at the time, there wasn't really anything like it that I had read. Right. And there was other books like it that he was pulling from that were like in the 80s or earlier or whatever. But it was something at the time it came out, there wasn't really anything like it.
Yeah.
And the art, J.G. Jones was doing the art. I hadn't seen his art before. He was really, you know, nailing it on the art. But yeah, Mark Millar is really kind of hit or miss with me. Like, he's writing this new one, Starlight, which is pretty much, it's a sci-fi book, under their indie book. I think Image or Icon or whatever Marvel's property is putting it out, I think.
Gotta be Icon or Marvel.
It's basically like this guy's Buck Rogers. And he had all these awesome adventures in space, then came back home and nobody really believed him. He wrote a couple books and no one believed him. So then he just got old and never, ever heard from that planet again. Well, then his wife dies and his kids forget about his birthday and a rocket ship like shows up in his backyard. He's like, you got to come help save our planet. Like it's back under control of like these bad guys. And he goes off into space and he's just like this old dude who's like now a guy who like the world thought he was just this crazy guy who made all this crazy shit up. Bitter and old, now he goes this world and he's like worshipped as this hero and there's statues built in his honor and all this stuff. And he's got to like refight to like take this world back. And it's a really fresh book because there's no one's really doing that like hard edge sci-fi. Saga's more of like a fantasy. It's out in space, but it's more fantasy.
It's
this
more
is
fantasy.
Like,
it's more a character driven.
Yeah, this is more like sci-fi, you know, concept driven than anything else.
Yeah, it's kind of. It sounds like it's closer to something like Warren Ellis's Planetary.
Yeah, and I gotta say, I mean, Planetary is another great example where
I love that book.
There's a lot of superheroes in it, but it's so off the rails. I couldn't imagine recommending. In fact, this is true. I've never recommended it to somebody who came back and said, "Oh, I didn't like it."
Yeah, I bought the omnibus.
Yeah,
and we were waiting to do a podcast. And it was one of those weeks where we were supposed to do it at noon and it ended up happening at like 5.
Mm-hmm.
And I just sat in the chair that Steven sits in, and I finished the omnibus.
Yeah,
I could not put it down.
Yeah, and it's Warren Ellis who.
He's
comes up with some really, really
he's a hard
crazy
sci-fi stuff. Guy. Well, he's probably most famous now for Iron Man Extremis, which was the backbone of Iron Man 3.
Yeah, and I think it's something with him where his concepts are so highbrow, but he's a really intelligent writer if you look at Planetary, because there was 25 or 26 issues, something like that. Each issue on its own is a standalone sci-fi movie, pretty much. But then there's this overarching theme that runs through all 25 issues that was just, like, unbelievable to see. And then you get somebody like John Cassaday, who they drew that book over 10 years.
Right, yeah. They would do, like, 2 issues and then stop for a while.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, there was as much as
very
5-year
sporadic,
gaps in between issues. And to their credit and to Wildstorm's credit, they never replaced the artist, the writer, the colorist, the inker. It was the entire... Mm-hmm. same creative team for the whole... I mean, we got the entire Lord of the Rings movie came out in between the first and the 25th issue of this book. Like, wow. Every Lord of the Rings movie, not including The Hobbit, came out. And you can really see, like, his art grow, because it was him getting into the business, and then him when he had done... He was, like, writing or drawing Astonishing X-Men, and you see him go
from... Yeah, he was doing both at the same time for a while, wasn't he?
Yeah, I don't know how many of the issues were overlapped exactly, but you can really see his art jump, and those first couple issues are good, but by the end of it, he's just... He's easily one of the best in the business, you know, as far as, you know, talent goes.
Yeah, that book just floored me, and I felt like that was kind of the end. And that was a DC book, right?
Wildstorm published it, yeah.
But it was when Wildstorm was at DC.
It was never an Image book. The Authority is it's in the same universe as, like, the Authority and those kinds of characters.
Yeah, because they did do a crossover, and they did a Batman crossover.
Yeah, the Batman crossover is phenomenal.
There is a Batman crossover where they meet every version of Batman.
All the iconic ones.
Because it's all about alternate reality, so they meet a Neil Adams Batman, and then he turns into an Adam West Batman, and then...
He does the Frank Miller Dark Knight. Yep. He does a John Cassaday version of Batman. They do the Bob Kane version. And you'd be like, oh, how could that work? And Cassaday nails Frank Miller's art style. He nails Neil Adams.
But he still looks like John Cassaday.
But it still looks like Cassaday.
It reminded me of when the Bruce Timm series did Legend of the Dark Knight, and they did a Dick Sprang episode and a Frank Miller episode.
Those were awesome.
But it still looked like Bruce Timm.
The only artist I've ever seen really ape another dude's style like that, to where you're almost like, oh, they must have brought in all these other guys to do it, is... Marvel put out Next Wave, which was kind of an indie book because it was so goofy. And Warren Ellis wrote that, and Stuart Immonen drew it. And there was one panel where they get attacked by, like, the Four Bushman, who's... I'm not going to get into who he is. But basically, he just, like, messes with your mind, and it's basically like you're hallucinating. And there's, like, five members of the team, and each member had, like, their own internal, like, dialogue of what they thought was seeing. So, like, he drew Machine Man as, like... Charles Schultz, and then he did Elsa Bloodstone in the Mike Mignola style from Hellboy, because she's a monster hunter. Then he did the Captain, who's just like some lunatic space guy, in the John Paul Leon style from like Earth X. Like, he just nailed like five different art styles in a row. It was like unbelievable. Like, I actually had to look through the credits of the book to be like, wait, they hired all these other artists to come in and do these
pages?
And
it was all Stuart Immonen?
Stuart Immonen just nailed it. And he's a dude too. Well, we can get in him all day.
He's great.
But I think indie books, they definitely have their place on the shelf, and they, I don't know if I want to give it a lot of credit or not, because they put out so much indie comics. There's a lot of garbage out there, but when you find a gem, they're awesome.
It's like indie film in that way.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember when I was in college when Pulp Fiction broke, and then everybody was like, indie film, indie film, indie film. And I saw so much garbage for the next 3 years.
Yeah, right?
Because it's really...
That's what everyone wanted and everyone's making.
Yeah, because the indie field is diamonds in the rough. And it's like, those diamonds are worth the effort.
Oh, absolutely.
It so is, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I remember when I was in college and I was looking into a young lady. Her name was May, and she was like, I love comic books. And I was, of course, into Transformers and stuff like that. And she was like, look at this book named Powers. And I had no idea that it was written by Bendis. And I got the opportunity to meet Bendis a couple of years ago. And the funniest part was that I had no idea about his Marvel run. I only knew about his indie run, which was Powers. I was like, wow, this is crazy. And then, of course, I hear through the years being associated with comic books, everyone's opinion about his Marvel runs and what was going on with the crossovers.
And I think Powers, you also got to think on the indie thing, that broke him. He wrote Powers for Icon, which is like Marvel's imprint, I think, or maybe another company.
It was for Image at first.
And then
Icon grabbed it up halfway through.
Yeah.
Some switch over with Marvel. Marvel finally committed to the indie section. And he jumped on it. He took the opportunity to jump over there.
And like you said, he nailed it. He made his name on that, and then he went to Marvel. And I mean, Hickman did the same thing.
Yeah.
Fraction. Fraction was doing Casanova.
Fraction too.
Yeah. Thing. Yeah. Yeah.
They Marvel did this whole, I think it was during Quesada's run, where they really pooled the indie writers for the next wave of talent. And that's kind of, it's become like film in that way.
Yeah.
Where if you make a big enough splash with your indie comic, Marvel and DC will come looking for you. I remember when Eric Powell did a couple of issues of Superman after he had been doing The Goon for a while, which is another book I loved. You know, Marvel and DC are looking at what's out
there. But why stop there? Like, let's go to movies altogether, right? Because what does the medium really do? The medium gives you an opportunity to have an artist create an entire world free of charge. All it costs is a pencil. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah I'm not a big Neil Gaiman fan. I don't not like him, but I just haven't read Sandman. There's a lot of stuff of his I just haven't gotten into. And he had one of the best quotes I've ever heard about comics. And he said, comics can be anything you want them to be. It's an empty bottle, and you just put whatever you want into it. And that's really true if you think about it. It's the reason why, like, we could all sit down and make a comic, because all we have to do is come up with a story, come up with a script, and then somebody to draw it. That's not that hard. You know, I can, in my head, have a bigger budget than any movie, any studio's ever going to produce.
Well, it's hard.
You know what I mean?
But it's cheaper.
Sure, it's doable,
it's
though.
It's cheaper.
Right.
Because all it takes is a number two pencil.
That's all you need.
That's the worst case scenario. Paper and a number two pencil.
Right.
Which is awesome.
Now, and that's why it's taken till now for movies to catch up. With what comic books have been doing all the time.
Exactly.
But you mentioned Neil Gaiman, and that was one of the first names that came to my head when we talked about this.
Yeah, he's probably one of the biggest names in
He is one of the – and I love Sandman.
Are we going to move into Sandman?
Yeah, we have to, because it's the elephant in the room. It's like –
you can't not cover
it. It's like not talking about Jack Kirby when we're talking about comic book artists. When, I remember when I decided in college that I wanted to write comics, a friend of mine said – well, you have to get this Sandman trade paperback because they reprint one of Neil Gaiman's scripts in the back. And it was it was the first time I'd ever seen it. And I was like, well, how do you format it? It's not a screenplay.
Right.
So I bought that trade, and it blew me away because the trade, it was like I think it was like the third trade in it. But it was a series of single issues. It wasn't a story arc. And one was drawn by Kelly Jones, and I think one was drawn by Jill Thompson. They were an anthology, and they just blew me away. And I was, you know, like 19 at the time. Sandman hadn't finished yet. And I just didn't understand that comics could do this.
Yeah.
Like, I had read Watchmen, and I had read Grant Morrison's Arkham Asylum, and I thought, okay, this is as far
as you
could push
stuff,
it. But I mean, in the 80s, it was edgier meant darker, more violent.
Right.
And Neil Gaiman starts that way. If you read Sandman, which you should at some point.
Yeah, it's the same thing with Doctor Who.
Yeah, Sam Keith started that series, who created the Max later. It's the first 8 issues, he's trying really hard to do Alan Moore's Swamp Thing, which is almost an indie comic.
Gotcha.
It might as well be the way he was writing.
He was trying to do a horror comic set in the DC universe. And you see Batman show up, you see the Demon show up, you see the Justice League show up. But then when he found his voice, he took that whole book and transformed it into something else, to the point where DC Comics had to say, you're not part of the DC universe.
Yeah, he was doing so many.
They're like,
things.
We're going to create Vertigo so you can be left alone. And by the way, we'll move Grant Morrison, who's doing Animal Man, over there.
Because that was getting crazy, too.
Yeah, and we'll create some more books over there. But he started talking about storytelling, and I didn't realize that until I got very deep into it.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like this fantasy-edged Twilight Zone of a book, where a lot of those issues are... he creates a world and a character, and you're just following this character for like 12, 16 pages, and you're dealing with their problem, and then Morpheus just shows up in it, like Rod Serling would, and turns the whole thing on its head. And I realized what he's really doing is talking about storytelling, because he would do a historical drama, he would do a personal indie comic, he would do a fantasy book, he would do a sci-fi story, but it was always about, this is how we as a culture tell stories. No one was doing anything like that in comics. Comics were telling the same story.
Yeah.
You know, comics were telling bad guy robs a bank.
Yeah.
You know, hero finds out about it. Hero finds them. Hero loses the first fight. Hero does more research, comes up with another idea. Hero beats the villain. And everybody was doing that story every month. And Neil Gaiman was like, no, these are all the stories we can tell.
Yeah, they both have their advantages. You know, the Marvel and the DC have the advantage of, like, we can always sell Batman comics. We can always sell Iron Man comics.
And we've said that many times. Is like, you get to a point where you love a character, Will. You will buy a story from a writer and an artist you don't respect because that character's in it.
Because it's the character.
Indie comics do not have that cushion.
No, but they've got the advantage of there's no rules. Yeah. You know, there's very strict rules. Every writer, I'm sure, is given at Marvel. Hey, you can't do this in Spider-Man. You can't do this with the X-Men. You can't do this, whatever. Indie comics is just like, well, they're your characters. You know, just do whatever you want. And, you know, they do. And that's why you get such – that's why you get such huge bombs. And that's why you get such huge successes. Yeah. You know, you got to remember when Sandman came out, that was outselling Superman. Like, right. That's crazy. Superman has, like, 60 years on Sandman, and it was outselling Superman.
And, wow. And Sandman brought a new audience into comics for the first time in a long time. Yep. You know, all the goth kids.
Every goth kid on the planet was reading Sandman. Absolutely.
And they were not moving over to Batman.
Yeah.
They were reading Sandman, and they were leaving.
No. I mean, we talk about Scott Snyder, like, his limitations on Death of the Family altogether. Because that was not an indie book. Like, if that was an indie book, that would have had a completely different ending.
Right.
Altogether. Yeah. That would have been, like, the top 10 as we speak right now.
He could have killed the Joker if it was an indie book.
Could have killed the Joker. Yeah. And he could have killed Alfred. He could have killed any of those guys.
And that's another thing about indie books. Because they can do anything, they're allowed to end. Oh, yeah. I mean, when I think of the great, when I think of my favorite indie books, they feel like they feel like one big novel. Yeah. Like, Sandman.
Good story. Yeah, and, yeah.
Preacher, which is one of my favorite books ever. Garth Ennis and, Steve Dillon. Thank you. Steve Dillon's done a lot of work. That is a 66-issue limited series. That is never coming back. But it is so perfect a book.
Yeah.
Huh.
You know?
And you get stuff like that, which is awesome.
Bone is another one. I love Bone.
That's
Bone is like... Bone is Charles Schultz in Tolkien, and it totally walks that line, and it does both sides perfectly.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's just like, you say what you will, I am not a Todd McFarlane fan. I hate the dude. But he said the same thing. He said, you know, he's reading Batman comics, and, you know, Joker escapes and murders all these people.
Steven, why would you hate me when I have so much money?
Yeah, right? Why would I hate a guy like that? And he says, you know, Batman just, like, locks him up, and how long before it's like, you know, Batman could just kill him and then end it, and we're done. You know, and then he did Spawn, and that was, like, the issue 3 or whatever. Spawn has that, like, pedophile, and he just kills the dude.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, Spawn's a shitty character who ripped off from every other character.
He's Batman and Spider-Man mushed together. Yeah.
But at the end of the day, he did something with the superhero book that most people weren't doing. I know he ripped off Watchmen and everything else too, but he was making the right point of, like, you know, you've got 80 years of Batman comics. You know, you can't kill Joker. He's a property of that company.
He's too valuable.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know what? And Todd McFarlane fell into that trap with Spawn where Spawn eventually wasn't telling a story. It was just kind of, you would pick up an issue of Spawn, and I read it for a long time because I liked McFarlane's art and I liked Capullo's art, and I still like Capullo's art. But it was like, you got the same five scenes every issue.
Yeah.
Like, Spawn's brooding in an alley, then Spawn has a fight with a monster, and then Spawn stares at his wife.
Well, that's a good example of the book, the indie book's not working, where he wanted to do, and to his credit, like I said, he wanted to do all these things that Marvel wouldn't let him do. The problem is, he didn't have you need a bigger idea than, oh, I want to do cool stories with blood. It's like, well, you're a jackass. You need a little bit more than that, which is why a book like, you know, why The Last Man can run almost 100 issues or 60 issues or whatever it did, and it was from start to finish, beginning, middle, end, it's a strong book. You know, or Powers, you know, where it's like, you know, at some point that's got to end.
It's got
to
end.
You know,
no,
it has to have a beginning, a middle,
end. If you're telling a story, it needs an ending.
Yeah, right. It begs an ending altogether. And it's funny that you say that. It's because, like, the failure of indie books is when they start trying to conform and become mainstream.
Yeah, like
Spawn
yeah.
is a great example.
We're on issue, 173 of something, or Spawn?
Spawn is it well in the 200s.
Yeah, and it's just like, and Walking Dead's falling into that trap. It's 120s, 130s, somewhere around there, and it's just like, you became the thing that you weren't.
I dare them to kill Rick now.
Yeah.
Because the TV show is so embedded in Rick that they can't do it. They can't do it. If someone comes into the store, hey, I like Walking Dead. They want to see Rick. They want to see something going on with Rick.
And that's something, too, where it's like they could have, or maybe they should at some point, but it's like the first 6 volumes of Walking Dead are great. As soon as they got out of that prison, it just becomes formula.
Yeah, well, we've said this is every book, and I buy the hardcover issue, so it's 1 year, but it's always the same. Rick and whoever's still with Rick finds a new group. The group doesn't trust them. They have a fight with a group. They assimilate into the group. Yeah. They think everything's going well.
They make Rick the leader of the group.
The group collapses internally, and then the zombies take advantage and swarm over, and then Rick runs on the road with Carl and whoever's left.
Yeah.
And he's done that story 5 or 6 times now, and whether it's that the comic has run out of steam and he did everything a zombie comic could do in the first 50 issues.
I think he did.
Or is it that he's doing a comic book as well as a TV show and now a second TV show?
Can you imagine?
And like Jeff Johns, he's spread too thin for ideas.
No.
If he has a great zombie idea, where's he going to go with it?
He's not going to go there anymore.
No, he's going to go to his TV series, success, which is still doing different things.
In
indie books, success really kills it. Let's be honest. Like, Why the Last Man, when I read that, I feel like it had its ending before it even started, and it was going to go there no matter what.
Yeah, I think with who's writing that?
Brian K. Vaughan wrote that.
Brian K. Vaughan. Yeah.
I think when Vaughan sits down and he writes Saga, he's thinking, oh, I know what my ending is. And I've read this from Kirkman, too, is that he said that, you know, his two big books are Invincible and Walking Dead. And he said he's got about 200 issues of Walking Dead in his head. Then this interview was like way before the show was even in the pipe work. So this was probably at least almost 8 years ago, maybe I read this. Wow. And he said he's got about 200 issues of Walking Dead in his head, give or take. And then he can, it's going to end. He wants to write that book start to finish. With Invincible, he said he can do about 500 issues, he figures, and then he'll hand it off to somebody else and it'll keep going like Spider-Man. And I think something like that is a clever idea of like, okay, like, you know, you hand off one, you kill the other. But I don't think that's true anymore. Now Walking Dead, like you were saying, is such its own machine, its own property. You know, Why the Last Man had the benefit of never being made into a TV show before it finished. Preacher had the benefit of being finished as a comic before anyone was even considering it for a TV show.
Yeah, and that's been talked about as a TV
now,
show.
Now, let's talk about that for a second, too. Powers, picked up by Sony, already had its own pilot back in the day for FX, right?
Right, it's gone through a couple.
Why the Last Man, Shia LaBeouf, or whatever his name
is. He was attached to it for a few years.
He's attached to Why the Last Man altogether.
I'm sure not now.
Walking Dead happened, like that.
Well, I think Walking Dead opened the gates for all these other TV shows. You know, and it's all kind of tied together, the movies and everything. But Walking Dead being an indie comic TV show, we'll get a Preacher TV show eventually. Right. They'll run out of ideas.
And you know, beyond
let's bring that one, last one up. Let's bring them all up.
Road to Perdition.
All those books. All those are amazing. And you know why?
Ghost World.
Do you know why? Because they had an end. They finished at a certain point before Hollywood got involved. Mm-hmm. And that's the big devil that we're talking about for a second.
Yeah.
Is before Hollywood got involved, these books were already developed. They show they stood the test of time. They already had a great following altogether. And then you move on.
Yeah.
You know, like you gotta
you come up with a new idea.
But when you have Walking Dead, when you have all these comic books that are growing and developing, and then Hollywood gets involved midway through, they start adjusting.
You get the same problem like you were saying with Batman, where too many chefs in the kitchen and change this, do this. How many conversations have we talked? We probably had these on the air with Dave, the other Dave, and he goes and he's like, you know, these guys, you know, they write one script, and then John, you've run into this problem too in writing, where you have an idea and you really want it to go in this direction, and then six other guys come in and fuck it up, and now it doesn't even look like your idea anymore.
Well, I was just listening to the Nerdist Writers Panel, which Ben Blacker does, who was writing Thunderbolts for a while. It's a great podcast. But he was talking to two guys that created Avatar, The Last Airbender, and they started to get into the movie.
Yeah.
And those guys were just like, we were in a meeting where we were the creators of the property and no one was listening to us.
Yeah.
Where we were like, and Last Airbender, if you've ever seen the M. Night Shyamalan movie, it's one of the worst movies ever.
It's pretty awful. I had seen the movie before the show.
I saw the trailer.
No, do not see the movie. Have you guys seen the show?
Yeah, the show's phenomenal. I've only seen maybe the first two seasons, but Tina is like obsessed with it. And she's the one who's like, you got to check out the show. We actually went to go see the movie with her. And I walked out being like, oh, that was a bad movie. And she walked out being like, fuck this movie. Fuck M. Night Shyamalan. I'm going to cut his dick off. Like, she was pissed. And it was something where it was like, I didn't understand the anger. I was like, well, it was a piece of shit movie, but Jesus Christ, like, don't murder the man's family. And then I watched the show and I understood, like, oh, of course.
Yeah, well, it was, and that movie, what they do in that movie, Dave, is there were really three seasons. There were three seasons of 20 episodes for that show. And again, it was a show, we're moving a little away from comics, but it was a show that had a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Yeah.
And it ended, and now they do The Legend of Korra, which is basically Avatar The Next Generation. So when they were told to go back, they were like, we're going to tell a new story in that world.
I got you.
But that is it. That show has a beginning, middle, and end. And what was crazy about that movie was that movie took the first season and made a movie out of the first season. So, like, in the same way, it was supposed to be like Fellowship of the Ring, and then they would do season two and season three.
Yeah,
I got it.
And every single point where the TV show turned left, Shyamalan turned right. And I'm just like, you not only do you have people telling you this is the way to go? It was done that way, and it worked.
Yeah, and it was successful.
And you're actively not doing that. And then that's what made me think of it when you said Hollywood.
Yeah.
And a room full of people that you know, the richest guy in the room, sometimes his opinion matters more than the person
who fucking created it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's like the biggest problem, and why no matter what movie you go see or how good the movies are, they'll never beat the comics. The comics will always be a better story.
Well, hold
doesn't
on.
Matter. No, well, for real, if you think about it.
Hold on.
Yeah, wait. I got a couple
as
of...
a Marvel, as a non-Marvel reader, I went to go see, and I apologize for everyone that was involved, I went to go see Guardians of the Galaxy very early in the game because that has already lifted itself way better than the comic book has ever
had. I'm not saying it's a 100% rule. I'm just saying you will always be able to find comics that you can read that will be better than any movie.
Yeah, but you know what? But today's point, I think the biggest example that popped into my head was, have you ever read the Men in Black comic?
But that's what I'm saying. No.
It's not good.
But what I'm saying is you have the freedom in comics to make a better story.
You do make a
because
good point.
It's especially if it's an indie comic, you have the writer and the artist. That's two dudes in a room. When you get a movie, how many fucking people are in the credits of a movie?
Hundreds.
Yeah.
Every single one of those persons is fucking up whoever wrote that script.
Yeah,
that's
all.
100 people fucking in the ass instead of just one person.
At the same time.
Well, everybody involved wants to put their own personal stamp on it.
Right.
Because they're all artists.
To back up on what I just said, Marvel has, they have just accepted the fact that the way the comic books are made is how the movies are going to be made. And that's what's making them successful right now. Like, they are not by creation, but by essence, going forward with the comic books. So Guardians of the Galaxy is successful because of they're following the comic book, the culture of it, and how it goes in story-based beginning, middle, end. There's nothing else that's doing that.
Well, also the Marvel movies are totally different from indie movies where they're producer-driven. They're not director-driven.
Because it's Joss Whedon.
Well, yeah, a lot of it's Kevin Feige. I mean, Joss Whedon's there, but Kevin Feige's driving that train.
True.
And you know what? And that's why you get people...
So you gave me two names right now. Who else is associated with those? When I say Batman Returns, I know about 10 names offhand that I could give you. But who else Marvel-based?
Well, I'm sure it's a smaller think tank of guys. Probably
yeah, Quesada, Millar, Bendis are all in there. Whedon has a big hand in it.
Jeff Loeb
is on the TV side. So he's on the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Ultimate Spider-Man, Agents of Smash, the animated stuff. But I noticed what Marvel's doing is that they're cranking these movies out two a year.
Yep.
And the only way to do that is to treat it like a big television show. And television shows are not director driven.
They're producer.
Directors on TV shows are there to put the camera there and get the take right.
The producer on
the television show
that's
has
exactly
the power.
The point.
And that's what's going on with Marvel. And that's why Edgar Wright gets pissed off and walks off Ant-Man because he's not at a point in his career where he wants to be a big television
and
director.
And another, as a staying on the topic producers, because it, you know, the indie or whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Our topic that we derailed,
which is, you know, fuck you, it happens. The Kevin Feige came up from the ranks of television or Marvel or something to be that guy.
Yeah.
He was involved
with X-Men. He was like a lower producer on X-Men.
And then assume this man, you hear him in interviews talk about this stuff, or you hear what they're doing in movies or where they're planning. Clearly, this man is a fan of comic books. He knows what he's talking about. He's reading this stuff. Most of the time, I think when I talk about like shitty producers, these guys are like the subhuman creatures that just throw money at things to get money back. And it's like those are the vermin that if you want to exterminate like a job on the planet, like you take care of like people that traffic in humans.
X-Men Origins.
And then, you know, you kind of go down the list of terrible people. Producers are on that
list
too.
Did you say people that traffic in humans or people that are trafficking the inhumans?
No, people that traffic humans.
Like, I just got this idea of like Lockjaw.
like
trapped
in
down in
like
a cattle car.
One of those like freight bunker things.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm just saying producers are scumbags and they have no business in Hollywood at all. And I understand that's where the money comes from, but make smaller budget movies for a while or something.
It does, truth.
I don't know. Why it's late, all right? I don't
why
know.
Does it sound like you're the one that's drinking?
I'm tired.
I know.
that's been a long day.
He has a great point. Like, seriously, like...
Like, what do you think fucked up fucking Kingdom of the Crystal Skull?
The problem is...
Lucas.
That people... And what was his title in that movie?
Producer.
Thank you.
I think the problem of it all together is people that do not love the art. And that's right. where the indie comics come to it.
Because that's what it's all about.
There's no money in
it. You can't even live off it, usually.
You're just telling a good story for good story's sake.
Right.
And that's where Saga came from. Brian K. Vaughan could have made a sugar load of money off of just selling the rights of Why the Last Man.
He
can we say that?
It was options.
He writes
there
for
was
television,
talk about it.
I think.
Yeah.
He's a television
he
writer.
He worked on Lost for a little while. Damon Lindelof, that's like, right. There was a point where Damon Lindelof was hiring up comic writers left and right because Jeff Loeb wrote some episodes.
Yeah.
Brian K. Vaughan wrote some episodes. Paul Dini wrote some episodes.
Yeah, half these guys wrote for Lost, so it was like...
Yeah. He got all the comic guys in, like, the second or third season.
And, you know, that's smart because they've got, you know, sometimes some good ideas. But I think it is something to say, like you said, the artists on these indie books, Fiona Staples 5 years ago was nobody. And she's still, you know, probably not making a fortune on Saga. She's the artist on Saga, for y'all who don't know. But now she's like, she won an Eisner, like she her career got made on that book now. And I think it's something where these young, really talented artists are so hungry for that hot indie book that's going to make them that's why you're getting such good books like this, where they're just like, they recognize, oh, I'm getting this great script from Brian K. Vaughan. He wants me to draw this book, or however that meeting went. And then she just busts her ass on that book and produces one of the best books of the year, hands down. That book won like a handful of Eisners.
But the
it's
same
crazy.
Thing. Transferred over to David Aja.
I think that's how you say
same thing altogether. Like, he wasn't on the radar at all. Like, he was doing a couple of things on the
side. Yeah, he did Iron Fist. He did a little bit on Daredevil.
But when Hawkeye came around and he had that script in front of him.
Yep, he's another one. He won an Eisner.
He whooped ass. Yep. Like, so, it's the cheapest medium to create a story with.
Right.
Let's be honest.
Right.
I think it's
the
best.
And now with digital comics, the biggest...
Yeah, that's what I want to leave to. It's also the best medium.
Yep.
Comic books is the best medium to tell a story. I mean, that's been in conversation for about 20 to 30 years.
Yeah.
Not only is it the cheapest, it's cheaper now than ever before, because your big cost in comics is physically printing the books.
Yeah.
And now with Comixology, you don't necessarily have to do it.
No, it's a flip. It's
even
a flip
guys
of a finger.
The only paper you need is the paper you're physically drawing.
Yeah,
on.
It's a flip of a finger. Not even that.
Yeah, you could do it all digital.
You could do it all digital.
I think
so. It's a flip of a finger on an iPad to figure out whether the story.
For the electricity to charge your iPad.
A lot of comic writers and artists, Marcos Martin is either doing a project with...
Yeah, he was doing a lot of Spider-Man for a while.
Yeah, he did a run on Spider-Man, a run on Daredevil, a couple other things. I think he's doing with Mark Waid or maybe one else, I can't remember. But they're doing this whole like online comic for free. And it's one of the, like, Radiohead did that album where, like, hey, pay whatever you want for the album.
Right.
And
that was a great album.
A connection now that I wanted to go to. And I don't mean to cut you off at all, but When we talk about record deals altogether, mm-hmm. there was a point where record labels would say, hey, you have a great sound.
Yeah.
I want to make sure you get out there. Let me do the legwork to get you out there. And then they turned it around to like, all right, I want to make sure you have over 1,000 people listening to you first. Or I want to have 100,000
people. Yeah, they're making the artists do the work now.
And then I know you're good enough to push out there. It's the same thing. We're now at the price point with comic books. Where that's where we're getting amazing stories. They're like, hey, do you have 1,000 people downloading your Comixology page? Mm-hmm. Like, or your book? Your
number
ones? And then from there, they're saying, now we'll publish it. And DC has followed the same way. Marvel has followed the same way.
Well, but as we said, what Marvel does is look at the indie book, look at the sales
DC
on it.
And Marvel,
there is no way Fiona Staples is not talking to Marvel and DC right now.
She did covers for the new Ms. Marvel book.
There you go.
She was doing covers for that, and I think Captain Marvel, because it's something where, like you said, it's like Marvel's doing what the record companies used to do, where the executives of Marvel, Tom Brevoort and Joe Quesada and all these other guys, they're going to the conventions, they're looking around, mm-hmm. they're reading indie books and trying to snatch up those hot talents. So, I mean, because if you look, let me fucking look at the list of best artists and best writers for the Eisners for the past 10 fucking years. It's all indie guys. Name one fucking major book that wins an Eisner consistently. Batman. I'm not saying that they don't win Eisners.
Greg Capullo came out from Image.
They don't consistently
Scott
win.
Scott Snyder came from Vertigo.
He did, but
Vampire.
You're absolutely right. There's a think tank that they create from. Yeah, that's why DC went to Vertigo. That's why they went to.
That's why they have Vertigo and push books and give people chances and give them shots.
And that's the thing, because these books are not going to sell, so there's not a big financial risk.
Right.
And then it's like, let's see what you do when you don't have any barriers. As we said, when you can let's see how far you can go, and then yeah, we'll pull you in a little bit to give you the big book.
Well, I got a question for both of
you. You know,
hosts.
Grant Morrison, you do Animal Man for 3 years. Oh, that's, you did a great job on that. Now do Batman.
No, no, no.
And that's interesting, too, is they'll take a guy like Grant Morrison who did all this indie work, and they'll be like, Grant, literally pick any group of, any character you want to do in Marvel.
And who does he pick?
And he picks X-Men, and he makes it phenomenal. And it's such a different take on it that everyone was clamoring for that X-Men. And then he did. And then they're like, well, what's he going to do next? And at that point now, Grant does any project he wants. He calls up DC. I want to write Superman. Fucking okay. Yeah. Like, whatever you want. Here's everything. All-Star Superman. Here's Batman. You know, he'll do whatever
he
wants.
Yeah, and he's a guy, if we're counting Vertigo as indie, it's just been decades in indie. As we said, he was doing Doom Patrol. He was doing Animal Man, which got pushed over. Then he did The Invisibles for like 10 years, which was this completely... It was the sci-fi world building, but completely personal. I got the omnibus, and I actually never finished it because it was so perfectly of that moment that eventually I went, this is so mid to late 90s.
It's hard to read.
I can't. And it's literally like, and reading Super Gods, his autobiography, I'm like, oh, I know exactly what you were going through when you wrote this. And it was that, it's that kind of personal mission where even though it's for DC, for an imprint of DC, it's not,
But it is creator owned, where there probably wasn't a lot of editing on it other than turn your fucking script in on time.
Right.
There's not a lot of people sitting over his shoulder. Oh, you can't say that. Or you can't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, they just kind of turn these guys loose now.
What's your big summer crossover going to be for the Invisibles?
You're writing Daredevil. You better tie it into Civil War.
Yeah.
And it's just like, well, fuck that. That's a stupid story. You know, it's like, and how much does that happen? You know?
Mm-hmm.
I kind of feel like I have the answers to this already, but I want to ask. The two hosts that are going on in Caffeinated Comics, who's doing a better job of farming independent artists to give them the quality work? Like,
I don't know. I think
for Marvel and DC?
Yeah. Marvel and DC. Those are the two bigs we're always talking about.
I think
all together.
DC's acquired the hottest indie artist. Your boy over in Batman.
Greg Capullo?
No, the backup artist.
Oh, Raphael Albuquerque.
Albuquerque did American Vampire. And everyone's been going nuts with that dude's art, and DC probably locked that dude down with an exclusive. Okay. Marvel, I think they got the best indie writer at the time. Bendis was the hottest shit in like the early 2000s, late 90s, and Marvel got him. And the 2010s or 2009 or 8 or whatever, they snatched up Hickman, and now he's like their brain trust, where he's writing all their big crossovers, he's in all the big meetings, he's steering that company. Bendis isn't steering Marvel anymore. Bendis is writing goofy X-Men books in the corner by himself, you know, and Hickman's like their new go-to guy, but he's a writer and an artist, but he's only doing art right now. And that, I think, so they both got a huge win for each column.
I agree. I think Marvel's picking the writers and DC's picking the artists.
Yeah.
Where Marvel, when you see a new Marvel artist, it's a guy from Spain. It's a guy from South America. Marvel's going overseas for their artists.
Yeah.
You know, DC's going through the indie titles for artists, but Marvel's cherry picked.
Yeah, and I think DC too has a bigger indie imprint by non-DC guys. So like Vertigo and all these other books, they're getting
Marvel's
indie guys.
Never really had a big indie imprint.
They've got Icon, but it's like, what's Icon? Well, it's a book written by Mark Millar, drawn by John Romita Jr.
Right.
All right, well, fucking John Romita Jr.'s been drawing Marvel comics for fucking 40 years. All right, now it's a book by Mark Millar, drawn by Lionel Francis Yu, who did Secret Invasion. Marvel's arguably one of their biggest crossovers.
Yeah, Icon is taking their A talent and letting them do what they want. Yes.
They can come up with movie properties, pretty much.
Right, and Marvel can get a piece of the Kick-Ass movie.
Yep, of the Superior movie and all that other stuff that's
also
in the
works. John Romita Jr. is bored out of his mind drawing the X-Men. Well, draw whatever you want for 6 issues and then come back and do Spider-Man.
Or do both at the same time because you're John Romita Jr., you kick ass, and you can draw 20 books
a
month.
Yeah, he's the only man
alive who could do more than one book a month. Find me that person.
Not alive.
Without driving themselves crazy. Ryan Atley did it for 3 months on Haunt and drove himself insane. Mm. And I saw Monin did it 1 month in his entire career. He did 3 books in a month. And I'm sure he didn't sleep.
John Byrne can still do it, but he's not what he used to be.
No, he is not.
Now, who's also, now, at the same time, who's taking advantage of this whole indie boom?
Who, everyone. Literally. Everyone, I mean, yeah. Fucking Brian Hitch isn't doing... he just did Age of Ultron, but then he came out with like America's Got Powers. Okay. That was his own thing. Now he's doing a book called Real Heroes. It, pretty much anyone who's got any kind of pull with any company or has made any kind of name for themselves in the industry is they will or have done an e-book at some point or another.
Right. Graham Morrison just did that Happy book in between Batman and Multiversity.
Yeah, and I think the guy who Dave Gibbons, I think, drew that.
Yeah.
Dave Gibbons did another thing with Mark Millar.
Basically, any artist who is worth something is looking for their own Walking Dead.
Yeah.
So,
I think that's what it is.
I have an idea that I absolutely want to cash in on. Yeah,
quietly, yeah, and Mark Millar just jump-started Superior. And, you know, it's just like McNiven did Nemesis. Then he did whatever that Superman ripoff book Mark Millar did. I don't know, Supreme or something. I don't know what the hell it's called. But it's like anyone who's anyone in the industry who's, we're talking like the top tier of like talent, the best writers, the best artists. If they have an idea, even if they don't have an idea, it seems like they're coming out with shit. Brian Hitch doesn't look like he has a fucking idea with this book he's writing, and it doesn't look, you know, well, super spectacular.
It's kind of like when Image started. When Image came out, everybody was excited. Like, these are the best Marvel artists, and they're finally let loose. And he's like, these were the guys that were doing Spider-Man and X-Men. What are they going to do? Knockoffs of Spider-Man and X-Men.
Yeah, you know what it was like a lot? A lot of Captain Image seemed something. Like, it, yeah. It's like they just took the leashes off all the dogs, and they thought, this can be awesome. And then the dogs just like ran around and then like wiped their ass on the furniture. Now I think it's, let's take these dogs to a play like a dog park and see what they'll do. And now it's like, then you're getting the guys who have like the control, or it's actually like, it's more concept driven than just art driven.
I mean, because
these artists, I mean, let's be honest, these guys are all lunatics. You can't, it's the lunatics running the asylum is what Image was for 10 fucking years.
Right, no editors.
Right, and then finally they were like, we should hire some fucking artists or some writers, and then they did that, and now they've got books like Walking Dead and Hickman's doing books and all these other guys, Haunt. Yeah, it's like they actually have concepts, which, you know, you fucking need for a comic book.
Well, Image was interesting, where it was this explosion of money and craziness, and then it crashed and
almost
a lot
took
of,
down the whole goddamn industry. Yeah,
a lot of people thought it was gonna go out of business, but they kind of just turned themselves into dark horse.
Yeah,
they were just like, let's be the indie publisher that we thought we were. We thought we were Marvel when we came out.
Yeah,
because they were doing better.
They were doing better than everyone.
They were doing better numbers than DC.
Yeah.
But when they imploded, they were like, well, what do successful indie titles do? And Dark Horse is probably the most successful indie title that's still an indie company.
Yeah.
And they figured that out with Walking Dead. It's like, we find really good ideas and we support that. And Walking Dead, I mean, I don't think Hickman wanted it in color, but that's a cheap book. That's a black and white book. Yeah. And a lot of the indie titles, like the original Ninja Turtles or Cerebus, going back to them, they're black and white because they couldn't afford a colorist and they couldn't afford to print it in color.
And I would say one more thing about the indies, because we haven't really mentioned him. We have a little, but I would say the most successful indie character and writer would be Mike Mignola. Because Hellboy came out right before good all the stuff, Image boom.
No, it came out right after what happened. It was a dark.
He was supposed to go to Image. They were talking to him.
They talked to a few guys. They talked to Romita. They talked to Mignola.
Yeah.
But they were Dark Horse books because it was Dark Horse's attempt to fight back against Image.
Yeah.
And they said, well, Image, you got all the young guys, the Liefelds and the Jim Lees. Well, we've got the established guys. We got John Byrne. We got Frank Miller. Yeah. We got Art Adams. Yeah. We got Mike Mignola. And that gave us, and that was a Legend imprint. And they had the Easter Island head.
Yeah.
And the imprint didn't last. And most of it bombed, but we got Sin City out of that, and we got Hellboy out of that.
And I bring up Hellboy because it's something where it's now an established character.
He's had two movies.
They keep talking about doing a third. Who knows? But it's quality. It's I've read every issue of Hellboy that's ever come out, and it's just a class book. Every 18 months it comes out.
Yeah, and it's one of I was right about to say that. It's one of those books like Planetary. He takes his time.
Yep.
Yeah.
Where Mignola second guesses himself and he rewrites himself and he throws away pages.
Totally.
But when it comes out, it's dead
and it
on.
And it also too, it's because at the time it came out, and even now there isn't a book on the shelf that looks anything like it. And I've heard,
yeah, it's been 20 years he's been doing that book, yeah, and still nothing.
And
looks
at the
like
time
it
came out, yeah, in the 90s, you have to remember, in the 90s everyone was more lines, more cross-hatching, more detail. Everyone's trying to do Jim Lee. Find me an artist who can do less lines and draw a better picture than Mike Mignola.
Yeah,
your kid uses more crayons in a drawing, mm-hmm, than Mike Mignola would use in an entire comic.
And he's only gotten more simple. If you look at that first miniseries, it's much more detailed than he became later.
Did I mention Oming by any chance?
Oming,
Powers, yes.
Aped Mignola for
at the
5 years.
Part.
And there's nothing wrong with that. He is a talented dude, but...
He's my favorite person in the world. A quick aside, philosophy degree. I just want to bring up Scott McCloud's effect on all this.
Understanding comics?
Yeah.
An incredible,
when that
incredible
busted
book.
Open, I gotta say, that has brought so much attention to people saying, you're right, this is the proper medium for storytelling.
And it is a real art form.
Art form.
It was a validating, yeah.
When he brought that to the table, I gotta say, all this attention that we're talking about right now, and I'm not saying that it's the sole reason, but it's the reason why.
Yeah, but credit where's credit due, absolutely.
I think that book, when I read it, and I read it in college back in 94,
93. Yeah, that's when I read it.
Even then, it changed my perspective on comic books and how important it was to the medium of storytelling. And really passing on how we should take it as a honor to take this medium on to tell a story. And
yeah, I read that book in college as well when I was deciding to get into it. That was like the next book I got after that Sandman trade, and that blew my mind
totally.
And I was like, oh, this, because he gets into this is how panels work, and this is what happens when you make a character simpler, and this is what an angle does, and this is what a larger panel does emotionally. And I remember I gave that to one of my English professors, and he, like, later in the semester he came back and he was like, that was amazing. He's like, I have it back for you. I was like, nah, you keep that.
It was,
I think, Dave, I think you're right. This is one of the most important indie books ever, because it was the comic. It was the first comic I'd ever seen about comics.
Comic books.
And it was a textbook on comics, but it did it as a comic. And that just reinforced
his point,
the power.
Yeah. I know. I read it much later. I was probably like 25 or 26 when I read it. And it was basically saying everything in a much more intelligent way than I could have ever thought, and then going way further, because it touched on things that I kind of knew, like from osmosis, I guess, from reading comics my whole life, you know. But to see somebody speak so intelligently about it and to describe it like he did was just it was awesome.
It was, and you can't, you know, because we're all comic guys here. Like, we knew we were going to gravitate towards that. It was one of our strengths. We love the medium, so it just reinforced what we were thinking altogether. But for the masses, for the people that whenever I wanted to explain it to a family member why I love comic books, I would give them that book first.
Yeah, here's why.
That would win them over, and they were like, oh, this is brilliant. I gotta assume that happened to everyone at that age. When that book came out, and
it did it for a whole generation.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why we have some of the greatest stories that we'll ever have, not on TV, not in movies, but in comic books.
Yeah, and you know, when we're saying when that book, I don't know if it had just come out, but we're saying we were in 93, 94, which was the Image explosion, when storytelling was not a premium and it was all about the pose. And now you look, I think that book has had an impact.
Oh, yeah.
Because you look at comics now.
Dramatically.
And we have gotten back to the medium strengths of storytelling, 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 storytelling. And that's exactly what that book's about.
Yep.
I can't think of a better book to close this conversation on. I think that's the top of the mountain.
Maybe that should be everyone's greatest thing in the world this week.
Yeah, I don't think we need a greatest thing in the world this week, because I think everyone in the room has said what their favorite book was. And so we don't even need to do that segment. So as always, you can follow me at Not In My Book. That is the Twitter feed. Thank you to all the podcasts and podcast networks that have been coming on board and following. I swear I'm trying to follow you all back. It's great to be kind of part of the community. And thank you to a lot of the Chicago Geek community that's kind of embraced us both on Facebook and on Twitter. Love to keep talking to you guys. Love to be a part of the Chicago geek community.
That's awesome.
I feel like it's really welcoming. It's been fantastic. Dave, how do we find you online?
You know what? I'm part of the Chimeras Comics, but I just want to plug out real quick. The 24-hour comic book challenge is going on October 4th.
Yeah, it's the first Saturday, October.
We're going to take the Scott McCloud, originating challenge where, including myself and Stephen Brown, have decided to stay up 24 hours straight through and draw one entire comic. I plotted it story-wise, but I have not drawn it, which is biting at me altogether.
Are you guys working on the same comic and getting one comic done between you? Or are you each doing individual projects and getting as far as you can?
I might actually just be trying to work on the book me and Karma are working on that has been a baby for 5 years.
That's your indie comic.
Yeah, I wish it was done. I wish it was your indie comic, so it was just over.
I'm inking it.
But I might have to work on that. But yeah, basically the idea is a 24-hour... our 24-page comic in 24 hours. All the information's on our website. We're going to have charity people there, all kinds of donations and stuff. A couple of the local businesses have been awesome about donating like some food, beverages, LGBA, stuff like this to kind of help us out. But yeah, it should be pretty crazy. And the day to be there would be that Saturday because we'll have already been awake from at least midnight to whatever time y'all ever show up on Saturday. So it's going to be, there might be some blood and there might be some dead bodies.
And where is the store?
19 South LaGrange Road in beautiful LaGrange, Illinois.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.